April 1st, 2016. The 22nd of Adar Beis, Tav Shin Ayin Vav, and we are in the midst of Perek Lamed Daled of Bereishis, which of course raises the major question of the destruction or the killing of Shimon and Levi, that they rampaged through the city of Shechem. So what? And as you pointed out yesterday, you have two questions. One is, what was their allowance? For what reason did they think that it was permissible? And then the second question is, if we're so clear why it was permissible, so why would Yaakov tell them it was a bad idea? Why would Yaakov disagree with them if it was something that they were supposed to do? So we discussed yesterday, and we're going to perhaps hash out a little bit more, the machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban. The Ramban appears actually in his commentary on the Chumash, and where he gets into the halacha, and the Rambam appears in his Yad Chazak, his Mishnah Torah, in the section of the Shivas, the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, in Hilchos Malachim.
Backtracking.
Right, the ninth chapter of Hilchos Malachim, if you'd like to turn to that page in your mind.
Yeah.
Okay, you got it.
Yeah.
And the Rambam quotes this story as an example of appropriate punishment for those who did not observe the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. Which of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach was not observed in Shechem? So says the Rambam, but that they are responsible for setting up a court system. And clearly they didn't set up a court system because their king goes ahead and blatantly and flagrantly violates decency, and yet they didn't do anything to stop him. So therefore they all deserve to die because of their lack of setting up a court system. So that raises, so one of the questions that the Ramban asks on that Rambam is that I understand the other six mitzvos, the other six of the seven mitzvos b'nei Noach are all prohibitions, they're all los haaseis. So I understand, if you violate the los haaseis, then you would be liable for death. But in this case, it's just shevi al pasa. They just didn't do anything. It was a lack of a positive mitzvah. So if a lack of doing a positive mitzvah, how could you say that they would all be liable for death? So on the page of the Rambam, so there are a couple of commentators, one of which is the Lecha Mishnah. So Lecha Mishnah explains that no, that there is a kumva asay aspect to not setting up a court system as well. What is that? That could go to that there is money, etc., that is given back and forth because of a lack of a court system, and therefore they are not going ahead. Therefore, the appropriate actions are not taking place, but they are actively pushing down the ability. They are not looking into dinim. They're not looking into the laws. Therefore, it's a kumbase. How one goes ahead and does that and flips it to being a positive action as opposed to a negative action is a little bit unclear. But that's the way Lecha Mishnah approaches it. Lecha Mishnah says, no. By not setting up a court system, there's also a positive action to it. There is the negativity of following through in a system of there not being a system. Okay. So one can make that claim. Or the Chidushei Aran also raises this question. The Chidushei Aran is a Rishon on Masechta Sanhedrin. The Ran appears as a Rishon on many Masechtos. There's actually two Rans. There's a Ran in the back of a Masechta, which is a commentary on the Rift, and then there's also a separate book called the Chidushei Aran, where he writes separately. So on Masechta Sanhedrin, there's actually very few Rishonim. So the Ran, there is a Chidushei Aran. So that actually becomes very well used over the course of learning Masechta Sanhedrin. So in the Chidushei Aran, he quotes, in the section where it discusses the Shiva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, he says that all of those that don't refrain from judging, that as if they have been mishatet, as if they have partnered with the wrongdoers. So therefore it's not that they are positively not doing justice, they are positively doing the prohibition, because they have not set up a way to prosecute those that do prohibitions. They are therefore encouraging, and they are partnering in those actions. So that is the claim that the Ran gives. So this is an essay in the Sefer Minchas Asher, Simon Mem Ches, on Parshas Vayishlach. So he says that it could just very well be that He says, no, it could very well just be that the Rambam disagrees with the whole premise of the Ramban. You know, the Ramban is set up on a premise that there has to be a positive action in order to be liable for the prohibition. So it could just be that the Rambam disagreed with that. That's not true. That might be true when it comes to punishments within Beis Din or within the Jewish context of law, but it could be in terms of enforcing the Sheva Mitzvah Bnei Noach, there's not a requirement that it has to be done Kumbase. So there's three answers as to the Ramban's question. On the Rambam, right? The Rambam said that they're liable for not fulfilling the Shiva for not setting up a court system. It's not a positive action. Three answers. Lachamisha is no, that is a positive action. There's the Rana saying that by not setting up a court system, they are partnering with the prohibition they're partnering in the prohibitions that therefore get done, so therefore it's as if they have positively contributed to the bad things being done. And then the third answer might just be the simplest one, and that is that the requirement that there be a kumvase aspect, that there be a positive aspect in order for there to be a death penalty, that may not be a correct assumption. Okay, so that's number one. Then he also, the Rambam isn't the Perish on Chumash, the Rambam is just explaining one side of the story, so the Rambam doesn't come along and answer the other question that we have. A, what vindicates, what allowed them to do all the killing? So our answer was, well, they didn't set up a court system. Okay, so Mr. Rambam, assuming you are, not Mr., Rabbi Rambam, will be, give him a little kavod, yeah. So Rabbi Rambam, please explain to me why Yaakov was so upset. And it's so pasha to you, I assume that Yaakov read the Mishnah Torah, even though it wasn't written for another 3,000 years after, I assume that he read the Mishnah Torah. So why would Yaakov argue on you? Why would Yaakov tell the boys that they did wrong? So the Rambaz explains, Rambaz is the other commentary on one of the other commentaries on the page of the Rambam. So the Rambaz picks up this this question, and the Rambaz answers by saying that because they were Megayer, they had gotten a conversion. How did they get a conversion? So they got a conversion by having a bris. Right? So Yaakov says, how could you have killed them? They converted to being Jewish. They did something wrong in the past. Well, what do we say about conversion? A conversion is kenola dami, as if they're being born from scratch again. So therefore, they should have an annulment on the sins that they had done previously. So that sounds like a pretty good argument, right? So why did Shimon and Levi not think of that? Shimon and Levi were involved with the request of them doing the Mila. They did do the Mila, so why? What is their machlokas? So did they have... So... Are they having a machlokas, perhaps, about whether this geirus was a successful geirus or not? Why would they be having a machlokas about that? So two things that the Minchas Asher brings up. He says, number one, he says, well, there is a machlokas about what is the status of a person of a goish niskayer l'shem ishus, that a non-Jew who converts for the purpose of marriage. These things happen every once in a while. Yeah. Right? Non-Jewish man meets a nice Jewish girl, he wants to get married, the parent of the girl says, ain't no way that you're going to marry my daughter, I didn't raise her this way, etc. And he says, fine, I'll convert. Right? If anybody wants to see a nice example, so there is of course, that brings to mind a Seinfeld episode, right? George wants. Okay, good. I got somebody here. So is that considered a successful conversion, assuming they go through all of the motions? So there is a machlokas about whether that is good or not. That's a machlokas in the Gemara. The Rambam holds that the Rambam. So, there's a question of whether that is a successful conversion or not. We generally postulate that it is, that if the person is sincere, even if the original motivation was for the purpose of marriage, we assume that that is considered a good marriage. The bigger machlokas, though, however, is what about a conversion when it is... when they're not really intending on keeping all the mitzvahs, right? Does that also work as a successful conversion? Or not necessarily don't intend, but that we have no... we have no clarity as to whether they intend on keeping the mitzvahs. They say, I'll do it. And so is that considered a good conversion or not? So the Rambam in his, in elsewhere, in Hilchos Yisuribia, so he writes that, that even if it sounds like, I shouldn't say, he doesn't say it explicitly, but on his list of things that need to happen, he does not include Kabbalah and mitzvahs. He does not include the idea that you have to accept mitzvahs. He says, assuming they go through all of these processes, even if it's L'shein Ishus, the conversion is going to be good. That's the way the Rambam concludes. So that sounds like...
Besides for the breasts, what are the other...
You have to go to the mikvah. In theory, you have to bring a korban, but we don't do that anymore today. So those are the three things. So that Rambam obviously raises a whole bunch of issues. You know, throughout the last century, so this was fought out on the pages of Igros Moshe and elsewhere, what is the status of a person who is converting for the sake of marriage, and they don't really have intention of keeping the mitzvahs. So some wanted to raise this taina and say, well, the Rambam seems to imply that you don't need to do it. So most poskim, including Rav Moshe, although his position may have shifted a little bit over time, but his position was, no. Yes, it might be true that the person would count as a convert if it's ambiguous as to whether he's going to keep the mitzvahs. But if the guy shows up with his lunch, and his lunch has two arches on it, right? And he says, what are you doing with that bag? He says, oh, this is for afterwards. Let me just do this process, but I need to eat lunch in order to go to work. So it's very clear that he's not intending on doing mitzvahs. When it's a clear umdana demuchach, when there are circumstances clearly seem to demonstrate that he is not intending on keeping the mitzvahs, so there's no way we can just blind our eyes and say, oh well, he's not saying he won't, so maybe he actually will keep the mitzvahs. So suggests the Minchas Asher that that might be what's going on here. That there is a keeping of the, that they all converted, but A, they converted for the sake of marriage, machlokas A, and B, they converted, it's unclear whether they're actually intending on keeping all the mitzvahs. That's machlokas B. Now, it could be that both of those actually work for good gerus, but that may have been the dispute going on between Yaakov and Shimon and Levi. Shimon and Levi saying, well, the conversion, please. Conversion. They converted. Yeah, they had a bris. Great. Because the king told them to, and they want to marry our daughters. Right? Wonderful. That doesn't count for anything. Well, Yaakov says, what do you mean it didn't count for anything? You gave them your word. How could it be that it didn't count for anything?
I would say it's not that they didn't decide. They were ordered by the king.
Anyways, one points out the Minchas Asher that maybe that's the machlokas that's going on between Yaakov and Shimon and Levi.
But the text seems to indicate that it's because they put them in danger by doing so. That Shimon and Levi put.
Oh, right. Yes. That's his third answer. But probably the pshat is right. Well, hold on a second. The second possibility on the halachic level, what their dispute may have been, is very nice. They converted. Converted to what? We've had this discussion several times already in the course of Rashi's. What was the status of Avram, Yitzhak, Yaakov and their families? Were they Jewish? Or were they monotheistic or something? Or were they Avramites or something? Right? They weren't necessarily Jewish yet. Well, they might be that they might not be a nation of Jews. I mean, a nation of Jews might have only started from Matan Torah and onwards, beginning of the Torah and onwards. Right. So that might have been their dispute as well. That Shimon and Levi, that Yaakov is saying, wait, they converted. Shimon and Levi is saying, wait, when they converted? Converted to what? They can't convert to anything. We're not Jewish yet. To which Yaakov says, no. They converted. They're into our people, and therefore they're in already. And how could we? We can't.
We had tradition of Abraham taking all his people under him.
Yeah, okay, but is that considered a nation? Because what happened to all those people? They disappeared. Right. Does that mean that there are all these Jews wandering around? Probably not. Okay, so that's section two. However, the third answer that he points out is that probably that that Yaakov's real complaint, and he actually says it in the Pasuk, is, no, by you doing this, everyone's going to be out to kill us. Everyone's going to be out to get us. And that's a simple explanation of the Pasuk. And Yaakov might even be adding, and they might be saying, and Shimon Levi might say, so what? We have a mitzvah to do it. We're supposed to kill them. To which Yaakov responds is saying, it's not Yehori Bal Yavor. It's not one of the big three. You don't have to put your life in danger in order to do this mitzvah. So that might have been that's probably the simple explanation as to what was going on. Assuming that, according to the Rambam, that they were just halakhically justified in doing what they did, why was Yaakov upset? Yaakov was upset because our life is now going to be in danger. To which their response is, well, what do you mean? We have to stand up for our sister. Right? It's not a mitzvah response. According to what we're saying, they should have had an obligation. What do you mean? It says b'feirush in the Rambam, Hilchos Melachim, and Perek Zayin, that we're supposed to do this. Right? They didn't say that. They came back with a national security response. Right? Well, if they start up with Dina, imagine, you know, we imagine what's going to happen after that. We have to stand in right now. And that was that turned into what their machlokas was. Okay? So that is the sheet of the Rambam. Yes?
This is wild and crazy. Okay. I just thought of that. The whole thing we're discussing, they didn't set up law courts, right? Okay, a din is the name of a law, right? Dinim. Who gets raped? Dina.
Okay, you're right. Wild and crazy. Okay, so
she's the one that suffered because they didn't say that thing.
Okay, very good. Let's go. Good.
Right here.
Okay, so that's the Rambam analysis. What is the Ramban analysis? So the Ramban analysis, what did the Ramban say? The Ramban, remember, said, well, why were they liable for death? Not because they didn't set up a court system, because they were liable for death anyways. These are people of Shechem, they're generally Rotskim, they're generally Ovdei Elulim, they're generally Migali Arayos, right? They do all of the big three. They do Avodah Zarah, they murder, they do immoral activities. So they deserve to die, right? And that's why Shimon Levi went ahead and killed them. So why is Yaakov upset with them? So Yaakov is upset with them because, well, maybe they might have done tshuva. Right? That was what the Ramban said. The Ramban said the reason they died was because they did these sins. That's why they were justified in killing them. Why then did they was Yaakov upset? Was Yaakov upset because they could have done tshuva? Don't say that. That's in the psukim. That's what the Ramban said. He's just talking about what the Ramban said. What?
It's back all the way to the region she was captured. Because she could have done Esav tshuva.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't then.
Okay. Very good. She was right. She should have gotten Esav to do tshuva. And now she should have gotten Shem to do. They could have gotten Shem to do tshuva, and they didn't allow for that to happen.
Right.
Okay. So what did the the Minchas Asher steps in here and says, okay, that's an interesting idea. So why? How do we understand this Ramban? And we say, wait a second. Sorry. He starts with the question. What? Since when do we say, oh, this person is liable for death, and we're not going to put them to death because they might go ahead and do tshuva? Right? Such a concept does not exist.
Sounds like somebody else.
Right? Do we kill people for that? So why did they kill everybody they came across? All the people were like that.
Oh, okay. That's a good question. He actually messed that a little bit.
They did later.
Beyond that, this is who they're confronting in the land of Israel. This is the first group they're confronting in the land of Israel. But you're right. They should have got, if the Ramban is right, they should have gone and killed them before they captured Dina, right? Dina, not taking away Dina, this is just incidental, right? They should have been going ahead and doing this anyways. Right, so that's a good kasha. Maybe they only had the opportunity here because they had this ability to bargain and get them both
to
get
first. Like the Muslims who say, if you're not, you don't file off, right. You deserve to die, you know?
Okay, so how do we answer that question, though? I mean, Yaakov said to them, well, they could have done tshuva. But we don't generally accept that. In fact, I think I gave this as a Shabbat tshuva drasha 2 years ago, like last fall, was this concept of why don't we accept tshuva on this level? We got Hashem to accept tshuva, so we should accept tshuva too. And if a person says they feel really bad about something, so why does Mason still go ahead and kill them anyways? Right? So what exactly was Yaakov's claim? So there is a concept, at least with Akum, says there's a Tosus in Avodah Zarah, where it says by non-Jews, the Akum Nerag Ba'ad Be'id Echad Uvedayin Echad, that even though non-Jews in theory could be killed based on one witness and one judge, as opposed to us who have much stricter rules, Mikol Makom Kol Zman Shalom Danuhu Beisin Einu Chayiv Misa. So long as they are not actually being brought to court, they don't have an obligation of Misa, which is an interesting question by Jews as well. What establishes their fee of Misa? The act that they did, or the Psakin Basin? So he claims, at least by non-Jews, the Psakin Basin is what establishes them as being liable to death. And therefore, so long as Shimon Levi didn't establish a beastin, whatever that means, and went ahead and killed them, right, they weren't actually liable to death. So Yaakov does have a legitimate tie to them, and saying, well, they could have done tshuva, because who said that you had to judge them all at that point? That's an interesting idea. He adds in another idea, that the Meshech Chacham writes in Parshas Ki Teitzei, that you have a rule of Uviarta Hara Mikir Becha. And this gets to Bruce's point before. Uviarta Hara Mikir Becha. That one is responsible to uproot evil from amongst you. It says the Meshech Chacham, who are they responsible to uproot evil? Only once they are amongst you. If they are living separately from you, so then that responsibility doesn't set in, right? Mivarta rami kerbacha ba'lo mikerb ha'goyim. So even though you have a responsibility to force the non-Jews amongst us to accept Hashem Mitzvah Noach, we are not commanded to punish them unless they are actually amongst us. Maybe that's what the Ramban was saying. Even though they were liable for death for all the things that they did, it wasn't necessarily the responsibility of the Bnei Yaakov to go ahead and kill them for it, because they weren't necessarily living together yet. So because they weren't living together yet, so they don't have that responsibility, and that was Yaakov's complaint to them.
What about like an intermingled, where you have an evil city where everybody is bad? Don't you have to kill them?
Not in your mikla. Your mikla is a safe city. Even in your nidachas. So your nidachas is responsible for killing everybody. That's a Jewish your nidachas. That's a Jewish city. Yeah.
What about Lavan? Didn't he do a free big affairs also? Lavan? He was
totally
an idol worshiper.
Okay. It could be. Well, first of all, it's unclear. Remember, we had a little discussion of the idols that she took. They weren't necessarily idols. They might have been like ways for him to tell the future. It's unclear what exactly she took, whether it was really considered a bazaar or not. But even so, right? Lavan, A, isn't in Israel. And B, they're not empowered to do that. Right? They don't have that ability. Right? This here, they have a city in Israel where they're supposed to be going ahead and possibly kill it. Oh, that's considered a different scenario. He quotes in another idea, which is a chiddush, but I think is very mistaver. I don't know why he calls it a major chiddush. He quotes from the Chelkas Yoav, where he says that it's true that the Shem and Noach all carry along with them a death penalty, leaving out the idea of setting up courts that might be subject to machlokas, but the first six, at least, all carry along with them death penalties. Now, what about, says the Chelkas Yoav, what about if you live in a city, or in a country, live in the United States, where stealing does not carry with it the death penalty? Right? Stealing carries with it a penalty of jail time.
Right.
So does that mean that theoretically we all have a responsibility to go ahead and go into the prisons and find all the people that are liable for stealing and kill them all? So says the Chelkas Yoav, no. That our din, meaning our halakha for the Shem Mitzvah Noach, is that they all carry along with the death penalty. But if the local court system sets up a system that does not include that penalty, so you're not liable, so that's okay. That's sufficient. That's okay. We don't have to go ahead and push for a stronger penalty than what the court system has. Assuming that you're living in a just society where where they actually have a punishment for some of these things, so what is, we are not responsible to push the envelope and go even further and demand that there be a death penalty along with it. So therefore, maybe that's an additional reason why Yaakov was upset with Shimon and Levi, that they established a that they might have other ways of, might have had other ways of stealing with the robbers. So they're saying, well, we have to go and kill them because they stole the demon, therefore we have to kill them. So it says, yeah, what do you mean? They have their own ways of dealing with it. And so let them go ahead and do it, and they might have been able to do tshuva. I mean, either you might be able to step in and kill them, they might do it, but they have their own ways of dealing with it, and they might have been able to be resuscitated in that way. There is a fascinating tshuva from in Igros Moshe in Choshen Mishpat Beis Simin Samaches. This is I've been told that this is the only tshuva in Igros Moshe that is written to a non-Jew. Now, I remember hearing this, and then I looked up today. I said, wait a second. There is a famous correspondence that Rav Moshe Feinstein had with Dr. Koop. Anybody remember Dr. Koop?
Yeah.
Right? From Shop and downtown. So what was the famous case that he had with Dr. Koop? That was a case of Siamese twins that were born to a couple in Lakewood. And there was a six-chambered heart, meaning they were connected at the heart. And in order to save the life of one, they would have to kill the other one. So they wanted to know whether this surgery was appropriate. So Dr. Koop said, Dr. Koop himself was a deeply religious man, right? He went on to be Surgeon General. But before that, he was a deeply religious man. And he said, I'm not going to do this until I talk to various religious leaders. And he had a whole correspondence with Rav Moshe Feinstein. Dr. Rav Moshe David Tendler, who still you know, still alive, Rav Moshe's son-in-law, who is himself a doctor. So he was the one who went down and met the doctor, who figured out what all the practical aspects are, went back to Rav Moshe, and if one wants to, there's a whole description of this online, of this correspondence that Rav Moshe had with Dr. Goop. However, I don't believe that there is an actual Truva Nigros Moshe. I looked around for it. I couldn't find an actual responsa that Rav Moshe wrote up about that case.
Really?
He passed it was mutter. He passed that it was mutter to kill one in order to save the life of the other one, maybe for another time, but I believe the end of the story is that the living one also ended up not surviving much longer anyways. But anyways, that's a fascinating story in Jewish medical ethics. What?
Did they have a choice of which one to save?
No, that was part of the cheshbon. That was part of the issue, that one was clearly living off of the other one and was actually killing the other one. So therefore, you could rule it with a rule of as a rodef, and okay, that was the.
If a yid steals, then
you steal, you're not liable for the death penalty,
yeah,
right?
But
no way.
If a goy steals, then he is liable for the death.
That's the assumption of the Shabbos of Tzvei Noach. Yeah.
That's shocking.
So Rav Moshe has the following responsa that he wrote to, even though he is entitled to malas kavut sar hamedina, to the officer of the country. My understanding is that this was written to, his name just all of a sudden escaped me, the governor of New York in the late 70s, Tavshin Mem Aleph, or early 80s. He has the bridge. The Brooklyn Battery Tunnel was just named after him. What?
Well, Cuomo was also...
No, before Cuomo. Governor...
I mean, I'm sure Connie Lindsay was in.
What?
That's the city.
No, not Lindsay. Governor...
No,
even before.
You're talking about 80s, 90s. You're talking about the 70s.
Okay, anyways, whoever the governor was then, the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel is now named after him.
Okay.
The governor... will come to me. So he, that governor, whose name is escaping me, had a very close relationship with Rav Moshe Sharon, who was running Agudas Yisrael at the time, and a very close relationship. Like, they met very, very regularly. And he was Roman Catholic, I believe. So there was a whole discussion at that time of having a death penalty in New York, and he wanted to hear the opinions of all the major religions had to say about the possibility of a death penalty. So Rav Moshe Sharon got Rav Moshe to write a tshuva to the governor of New York, telling him what the Jewish approach to a death penalty was, and not just the Jewish approach to a death penalty, but the Jewish approach to a death penalty in a secular government, whether that is something that is appropriate or not. So he begins, he has the first paragraph that says that he very much appreciates this opportunity to talk, and he gives a lot of respect to the governor, which is important to read sometimes as well. And he says, I'm very impressed that Yisbar al Yidei Moshe Rabbeinu Ba'abir B'Torah Shabbat Peshen Nimshar B'chad, that you want to hear what the Torah Shabbat, I'm not telling you the opinion, which is through the Torah Shabbat Peh, that was given through the Chachmei, through the generations, until it was written in the Gemara, and the authorities, and the Rabbim, and the Shulchan Baruch Va'od, Shehidas Hamitis, which is the correct understanding. I mean, even though he's talking to the governor, he's not apologetic. He's saying, I'll tell you what I think is right. It's also important to keep in mind that he's turning to the Orthodox rabbi for an opinion. I don't know if he turned to a conservative or reform rabbi for an opinion, but Rav Moshe is being totally unapologetic and saying, I'm telling you the correct approach. Now, Rav Moshe goes on and says, so can you be against the death penalty in New York State while still being a Torah-believing Jew? So I'm not sure what the conclusion is. Rav Moshe technically was anti-death penalty or not, but he does explain, one could say, and make a very large distinction, that why do we have a death penalty? The reason why Torah has a death penalty is not to punish the perpetrator, and not to keep the perpetrator off the streets going forward. It is to establish the graveness of the prohibition that he did. That because we attach a death penalty to that prohibition, you see how bad that action was. Which is why you get to the point of understanding that hardly anyone was ever put to death. Why? Not because the standards of evidence were so high, necessarily, although that could be an approach. The reason is because we were able to successfully establish the prohibition at such a high level that nobody would go ahead and do this. And he says, and you don't hear it. You don't hear of there being many Jewish murderers or many, until a point where there were. Until there was a point where there were, and then they actually at that point abolished the death penalty. So Rav Moshe says that, yes, it's true that while we have it in Judaism, but the way to use it or the lack of use of it is what demonstrates its effectiveness. Now, you have to do it every once in a while in order to demonstrate that it's true, but it's not really being used as a deterrent in the way of, if you do this, you're going to be killed. Rather, it's being used as a deterrent of, realize the magnitude of what you are doing, how bad it is what you are doing, and that's what keeps people from doing the prohibition.
That means that people are naturally moral. They have a moral sense, but they need guidance from time to time.
So what did he say?
So his conclusion is, this is Kol Zehu, you want to hear the last paragraph, Kol Zehu Kishlo Hufkar Isra Ritzicha El Shebishvil Eze Taiva Gedolo Eze Meriba Al Tainis Mamon V'chavu Ase Rav. And all of this is true when Isra of Ritzicha, the Isra of murder is not Hefker, meaning everybody does it. Ha'am Yishahorig Nefashos Machmas Shehufkar Etzlo Isra Ritzicha V'hu Achzari B'yoser. But if a person was just a crazy guy, was a serial murderer, V'chein Kishin and it's Rabu Rotskim, where there's many murderers around, but Osei Risha, and they do these evil things. How you done the Migdar Milsa, Lindoa Maisa Ritzicha, Shehu Atzal Samadina. So we would go ahead and do it in order to keep away the Maisa Ritzicha, in order to stop people from murdering, Shehu Atzal Samadina, which would be a saving to the Medina. So ultimately, it includes that it is, I guess, a good idea to have on the books, to have it as a useful tool, but what's fascinating, so I don't think he really took a stand on what the official policy of New York State should be, but his official policy, the fascinating part of this tshuva is, what is the Jewish approach to the death penalty, right, to establish Chomer HaIsser, to establish the graveness of the prohibition, as opposed to many of the other things that we hear around today. There is also out there is a statement in New York. Apparently, New York, I actually found this once. New York Magazine did a article once, a long time back, of 50 wisest New Yorkers, the 50 smartest New Yorkers, to which they quoted Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. So there were two problems with the picture, with having Rav Aaron Soloveitchik in it. The number one was, is that instead of having the picture of Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, they had a picture of his brother, Yosef Soloveitchik. And the second problem was, is that he's not technically a New Yorker, he's technically from Chicago, and he just came in to teach in New York once or twice a week. So anyways, Rav Aaron was known somewhat for his liberal views, and he was anti-death penalty, and the quote that they had of him that makes him so wise is that, yes, I can find out exactly. I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was, yes, it's true that we have such a thing called the death penalty, but the fact that we have to use it, that we would ever have to use it, should be a blight on our souls or something like that. Kind of a backwards anti-death penalty quote. I guess we're past our time. So that is. Is that a little bit of a development of the machlokas Rambam and Ramban, right? The Rambam's idea that it was a lack of the Sheva Mitzvah, that was because they lacked, they didn't do their court cases, so that was, we pointed out whether the fact that that's a not a positive action, what kind of effect that has on the psak. And then the Radbaz's question of why was Yaakov so upset with them, and there's a couple of possible disputes that Yaakov was having with Shimon Levi about whether they should or shouldn't have done it. And then we had the Ramban's approach that it wasn't because that why did Shimon Levi go ahead and kill them, but they went ahead and killed them because of all the other prohibitions that they were doing. To which Yaakov complained and said, well, they could have done tshuva. So what kind of claim is that? If they should be punished, they should be punished. So we had a couple of approaches to answering that question, and we concluded with Rav Moshe's tshuva on the death penalty and having it in non-Jewish societies today. All right.